Welcome to the College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. I'm your host, Kevin Negandhi. Today on the podcast, there's only one thing really to talk about. The national champion LSU Tigers and their fantastic win over the other Tigers. That is from Clemson. I was in New Orleans all week. I was down on the field for the game. Spent a ton of time with Herbie and Pollock. Some would say too much time with David. So we'll talk to him about the game and look ahead to the offseason a little bit. Herbie's got some strong opinions as well, especially from what we saw from LSU's offense and Trevor Lawrence on the other side and how he could rebound. Before we get started, a couple of housekeeping notes to get through. This is your reminder that if you haven't done so already, subscribe, rate, and review the show wherever you listen to your podcast. We'll be active in the offseason, just not 3 days a week. And if you subscribe, you'll get the latest from the College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock whenever we drop a new episode. Also, check out the latest edition of First Draft with Todd McShay, Mel Kiper Jr., and Chris Sproe. They're also talking about the title game, but from a draft perspective, whose stock really helped themselves out after that performance, who went down. There was a lot of NFL talent on the field on Monday night. They'll have you covered on that front. Check it out wherever you're listening to this podcast. And finally, we need to check in with our friends at Allstate because mayhem on Saturdays in the fall is inevitable. Mayhem happens on the field, off the field, and in the polls. Mayhem lives on the wind, in the rain, on the foot of an errant kick, and during a trap game. You'll find mayhem in the parking lot during tailgates, charcoal that's not totally out, an errant football through a window, a flat tire, a lost side view mirror, etc. Allstate protects you from mayhem in the parking lot and outside it, at home and away. Can't stop mayhem from happening, but you can get better protected from it with Allstate. The potential for mayhem during the playoff race is rampant. Underdogs, trap games, unexpected weather. Get better protected from mayhem with Allstate. Contact your local Allstate agent today. Now, on to the show.
The College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. Now here's your host, Kevin Negandhi.
The gang is all back together again. We had a couple days to let the national championship marinate and let it all sink in. I'm sure the Tigers are still partying. That is of LSU, as New Orleans was, New Orleans was lit. New Orleans, it was a really good time. Despite not seeing much of the sun, we had a good time this whole week. And, I'm sure LSU fans are still celebrating what we witnessed and watching Joe Burrow, guys. It is a true pleasure. And when you look back at the numbers, it's not so much. I've heard some people say it was maybe the worst game of his career when you look at completion, at least when we talk about this entire season. But 463 and 5 touchdowns? Are you kidding me? He was incredible, Herbie. Your first thoughts on what you witnessed with LSU winning the national championship?
Well, I think it's easy to look back and see that 42-25 and Burrow, you know, with the yards, even though, as you said, it was worst performance, it's still pretty productive. But, you know,
it's nuts.
But go back to the beginning of that game and, you know, the way Clemson prepared and the wrinkles that they gave them. You know, I think it was the first three possessions for LSU, all punts. You know, they couldn't get anything going and he was running for his life because of the combination of, you know, players like Isaiah Simmons making plays, but also the position that they were put in. So they had to kind of go. I think it's very fitting in this year of 2019 where Joe Brady and Joe Burrow and all those athletes made so many plays that they had to go back to the drawing board and say, okay, man, they're throwing this 3-1-7, this penny coverage at us. What are we going to do? We've got to try to move here on the fly. And eventually they started to take shots downfield. They hit the first one to Jamar Chase, and then they seem to find their answers and get things going. In fact, you know, they went from, man, what are we going to do? Or, you know, we're down 17-7 to before the half, they're up 28-17 in the blink of an eye. So that's a credit to them. It's kind of been who they really have been all year, David. But I think it's worth remembering, not just, boy, there they are smoking cigars, another championship. Wow. They're dominant. But they had to fight for this one. They had to make in-game adjustments, which makes me appreciate it that much more.
And by the way, when defenses run a penny defense on you and they bring in all those DBs, 99% of the time the answer is running the football.
Right, right.
And they were like, you know what? We good. We got a guy back here. We'll go four wide. We'll go five wide. We'll spread it out. We'll just chuck it around and play football. That's kind of amazing because that's the reason as a defensive guy, I don't get in that because I can't fit my run fits. It's really hard to stop the run in that. And LSU was like, nah, we're good. And just, it was unbelievable to watch. And, you know, listen, we saw it all year long and we thought who could give LSU the best game and who could beat LSU. And in the end, it was a tough task and nobody could do it. And that's why they'll go down as, you know, possibly the greatest team of all time. And I know I've heard Kirk speak about it and I can say it too. I've never seen all the pieces come together like this so perfectly. You know, listen, they had receivers. They had a great tight end. They had a back that who knew what the heck he could do. Nobody knew he could do that. And now you pair it all together with a perfect system, the perfect quarterback, the perfect situation. And it was the perfect offense and it was the best offense I've ever seen.
Yeah. Ja'Marr Chase was incredible. I actually felt really bad for the Clemson DBs and they had to make some adjustments. Venables did as Ja'Marr was doing anything he wanted. And I thought their game plan to make sure Moss was involved early on too was such a big, big strategic move because then you have to be responsible across the middle and then you have the outside open. And that's what it felt like as the game was progressing and the offense was getting better field position.
Yeah, I don't know what you guys, David and I really didn't have a chance to talk after. I think what you're saying makes a lot of sense. So even though they were in this penny, if you really go back and watch it, Brent Venables was overly aggressive. You know, they had a lot of guys up tight and he even told me before the game, you know, it's a little deceiving because you think that even against Ohio State when they played their base, that's when J.K. Dobbins hit some creases on them. They went to that, you know, what they would at that time, they didn't necessarily go to a penny. It was more of a dime. But they had the odd look with three down linemen, and it looks like wow, look we can hit them in the middle here. But they attack with their inside linebackers to kind of fill those gaps, and then the safeties are coming down as well. So they kept leaving Ja'Marr Chase and Justin Jefferson and Terrace Marshall on islands, and you know the confidence that Joe Burrow has. It's like okay, which one of my guys are you not going to put a safety over top? Because whoever you're not going to put a safety over top, just so you know, we're going to put them in a slot and we're going downfield and we're basically going to take that anytime we get it. So like I said, it was very symbolic of the 19 season and it'll be our lasting image, just seeing those receivers going downfield, making plays and reminding us of what. You know, the first time I really saw that was when they went to Austin and they got challenged and everybody thought, okay, let's see how good this new so-called LSU offense really is. And they made it pretty loud statement that weekend and it just carried it throughout the year and just kind of a culmination, I thought, in this game.
And by the way, twofold, Texas fans who think, oh, we played Joe Burrow really great. That wasn't the same offense at the end of the year. Newsflash. They continue to grow and get better and gel together and have answers and continue to improve along the season. So please don't send me scores and tell me that Texas played them great and all that good stuff.
People don't say it. Are they seriously saying that?
Oh God, yes. You know how that works. But listen, a caution to every offensive coordinator, a caution to every football fan out there. If you think you can just go five wide now and spread the ball around and have a mobile quarterback that's pretty mobile and you think that's the answer to solve everything, this is an anomaly. This is not something we've never seen this before because of there's a reason because of it. Joe Burrow, not only is he accurate, by the way, stupid accuracy that just you couldn't go down the field and hand it to people a lot better. He doesn't get rattled. And that was one thing that, again, down 17-7, getting hit a lot, Kirk, offensive line not protecting him great. He gets hit and it's almost like he gets pissed off. And it's like, oh, wait, you're going to hit me? Okay. Like, come on.
He does.
Let's go.
He does.
Let's get it roll. And just, you know, it's having the answers at tight end and having the answers in the slot and having answers at running back and having all these guys that come together for the perfect fit. You can't say this offense next year all of a sudden is going to be ridiculous somewhere else and you try to replicate what it is. This was literally the perfect fusion together at the right time in the right moment that, you know, it can't be duplicated again. It can't be replicated. And people better hesitate if they're going to try to do that.
I'm glad you brought that up because, I mean, we touched on it, but I think it's good to just kind of close off this year with just a reminder, as you just did, that I think it's just the perfect storm. It's the system of Joe Brady coming over from Drew Brees and the Saints. Okay, so he brings that system, full progression reads. Now, for people that don't understand what that means, college quarterbacks, most college quarterbacks are going to read half the field. They're going to read that flat defender. They're going to read man coverage. They might, the guys that are get 2 and 3 years experience, they might be able to work to the middle of the field. But even then, you got a tight end running a crosser. The linebacker comes up. You hit maybe a bender behind that. But it's simple stuff. And most college quarterbacks, to me, there's only two, Tua and Joe Burrow, who's kind of like a master's degree in this, have the ability to read and comfortably come off of A to B to C. It's like your phone. Like if you have 4G and other people have 3G, you know, Joe Burrow's brain works like almost like at a 5G. And so when you bring in a new system and you've got five receivers out on almost every route, and you've got Joe Burrow, who's over at the film room, like an offensive analyst or an offensive assistant coach. He's a graduate student who takes all his classes online. He's honestly, according to him and Joe Brady, he's at the facility as much as Joe Brady. So you have that. So you have a quarterback that has an ability to understand every blitz, every coverage that you're going to throw at him. So he's going to know what to do with the football when he sees the coverage, and he'll go bink, 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 bink. And they're just, even Trevor right now is growing in that capacity. You look at him at 6'6", 220. He's a first pick overall, but his mind isn't yet where a fifth year senior like Joe Burrow is. So I'm with you. It's a perfect storm. You can't just, hey, let's go visit Joe Brady and put this offense in. It takes the quarterback to understand it and have the time to put in to study the film and understand blitzes. And then you need Clyde Edwards-Helaire, you need Thaddeus Moss, you need Terrace Marshall, you need Jamar Chase. Joe Brady will go to Cincinnati and he will digress with the ability that he has around him other than AJ Green. He will take a step back. Think about that. He's playing with better personnel in college than he'll play when he goes to the NFL. I mean, I think that says it all right there. And he's going against college defenses compared to, you know, in the NFL.
Yeah, Burrow, lightning in a bottle, 23 years old, the difference between him and Trevor Lawrence. We'll get to Trevor in a second, but I want to get your final thoughts on this season. It's a storybook thing. 60 touchdown passes, guys. It's just incredible, the perspective, especially who they have played. We're not talking about, you know, the old Houston, you know, David Klingler, you're run and shoot and just throw the ball up and who cares about the defense. They play great defenses, right? And we're talking about a guy that has 60 touchdown passes and he caps it off with the Heisman and the national championship. Is this the greatest season? Is this the greatest season for a quarterback ever?
It's got to be, right, David? I mean, I mean, you could put the David Klinglers and the guys that play those run and shoots, you know, their numbers. You know, was it Tommy Chang or somebody like that put up crazy numbers? But as you said, it's just so different, man. This is such a different. This dude's throwing the ball downfield. It's not run and shoot. You know, throwing the ball 2 yards downfield and getting 60 completions a game. This is big boy stuff. Like this is throwing the ball vertically and making reads and it's the best performance I've seen. It's the best offense that I've seen, not just as a guy who covers it last 24 years, 25 years as a player, going back to being a fan. I mean, I thought Tua's offense last year was outstanding. They obviously weren't able to finish it off. I mean, there were moments last year where they were just scoring at will, but We live in a different era, right? I mean, going back to the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, offenses, they didn't think this way. They didn't attack this way. And so I think it's a little bit unfair to compare offenses to going back to that era. But in the last 20 or 30 years, I can't think of anything that's been as impressive as what we witnessed this year with this 2019 Tigers team.
I'm with you. They beat 2, 4, 6, 7, 8, by the way. They beat all of those teams. Joe Burrow had second highest completion percentage in the history of college football, most touchdown passes in the history of college football, most total touchdowns, threw for 5,600 yards, second best QBR while facing seven of the top 40 defenses in the country.
It's pretty good.
I mean, yeah. I mean, if you're a numbers guy and you like that kind of stuff, you know, you play good teams and you shredded them, but so it was definitely, you know, it was,
and there
wasn't
a coverage or a blitz you could, I mean, you know, might get him one or two times,
but
like,
that's it.
Like David said, he, and I remember when I sat down with him leading into the game for that feature, I was like, has anybody got you? And he's like, you know, Grantham got me once, but then he came back with the same blitz. And if you see him, tell him, what is he thinking trying to come at me with the set? like he was mad about it. Like, I'm serious. You tell him, I can't believe he tried me a second blitz. So like he in a competitive way, when Clemson was getting him in those first few possessions, beyond just trying to win the game, he was taking that personally, because I don't know if I've ever seen a quarterback who takes so much pride and being able to affect the offensive line. Okay, here's where the blitz is coming from. If they bring one more than we can handle, I've got the answer. Everybody relax. He puts all of that on his shoulders. And so when it's not going well, he's getting mad at himself. He's not, you know, like David would get mad, you know, or, you know, anybody who's super ultra competitive. He just happens to be the face, and most quarterbacks are very mild mannered. Very, you know, I'm gonna just go to the sideline and be cerebral, and he does that, but he also has a chip on his shoulder about it, and like I said, in a competitive way, and then I will say this: as much as we're celebrating this team, I really wasn't a big fan of the post game stuff, the OBJ stuff with the money, you know, the way they handled themselves at times. You know, if it's just about 2019, great, but this is about staying power, right? This isn't the finish line. This isn't the finish line of their program, right? I mean, don't they want to win in 2020? Don't they want to win in 2021? I almost feel like it's all the chips in. We made it. That's it. Forget everything else. And I don't know. Part of what makes Clemson, they're going to be preseason one next year. Part of what makes Alabama, is they don't do that. Like, sure, they celebrate. Sure, they're happy. But guess what? They have freshmen that are watching. They have sophomores that are watching. They care about the health of their program. And so I thought they showed a little bit of immaturity and just kind of like not knowing how to handle it with the way they celebrated postgame. That's just me personally, because this thing's about 2020. This is about Coach O building a massive program and trying to become the new sheriff in town in the SEC West. And the way his team reacted, I almost feel like everyone's going to the NFL. Everybody's, you know, acting like this is the top of the mountain, which it is for this year. But I don't know. It just, it seems a little bizarre to me.
They can't control the OBJ stuff. You know, that's not.
He made that about himself.
Well, they can't control that. Now, listen, if I'm LSU, I don't ever have him on the sidelines again for a national championship game or for any big games because of that.
But Burrow's comment about, hey, I'm not a student athlete anymore. Yeah, it was real money. I mean, if you care about the program, do you really say that?
You wait 10 years till the statute of limitations.
Whatever.
Runs out, 10 years down the road.
About this year. That's my point.
And by the way, look at the mass exodus. I mean, now
It's going to end up being nine of them.
Nine of them that are going to leave, and obviously the big names with Edwards-Helaire and Jefferson, but the offensive line, everybody that basically can leave,
and some guy named Joe Brady also.
Who's
that's
he?
A big story.
I mean, when we went into this game, I thought, you know what, man, this LSU team with a Tua leaving and Alabama, I was like, not only are they going to win this thing, there's a really good chance that Coach O's got some mojo going right now, right? This thing's going to be around for a while. And then after the dust settled, I'm like, all right, let me get my Bama roster back out. I don't see them coming back next year at all.
This could quickly go, Kirk. It could quickly go the other direction.
Yes.
And I'm not saying that they're going to collapse, but
no, a collapse to them is nine wins.
Collapse, yeah, but to them, nine wins, back to nine wins is what they have with Les Miles,
Right. You know, that's what they used to have. And next year could be closer to that. And it will be interesting to watch the mojo and, you know, by the way,
the hunger, the desire, the chip on the shoulder that they played with last year. Like, listen, are they going to still have that? That carried them this year.
And you can't catch lightning in a bottle like that with an OC again. Like, you can get a great OC, but to do that, like Ed Orgeron told us, you know, how he got him, and he went to the Saints to just learn some more RPOs, and the first day they're like, listen, we got a really good guy that can run this, and they bring in Joe Brady, and said, immediately, he said he started recruiting him. Like, that's not gonna happen every single year, so it will be incumbent upon Coach O, and what kind of culture do you, and now, by the way, I do like the way Coach O handled himself.
Oh,
I thought
for
he handled himself great.
Perfect.
He wasn't over the mountaintop. He was like, we're going to be here again. We got more to do.
100%.
He wasn't like Mr. Jack doing cartwheels and backflips and stuff. Cause O is always excited. He's always
totally
jacked
agree.
Up.
Mm-hmm. Totally
kept himself
agree.
Really homed in.
Yep.
But yeah, Clemson, by the way, Clemson, I told all the Clemson fans, Kirk, we were in the airport. We got delayed for like 5 hours. I know you took the bird out.
Yeah.
You got really quick, but all of us stood and got delayed for 5 hours in the airport with all these Clemson fans, and some of them were upset. And I'm like, listen, bro, you got an automatic bid next year.
Yep.
Do not get upset. There is nothing in your way next year of being right back here. So go ahead and book your tickets because you're not going to play anybody probably in the top 25. It's going to be very simple. And listen,
well, they do go to South Bend. They do go to South Bend. So that'll be
good.
That'll be
fun.
25. And it's in November. So, you know, that'll be a good one.
Yeah, hopefully.
But I'm with you, dude.
How do you guys...
I think we all see Clemson setback, frustration, but this thing is not. Of the two teams that walked off that field, the team in orange is not going away. You know, Trevor Lawrence, I talked to him the other day. He's already, like, in the gym. Like, I mean, it's almost like, I mean, you hate to say this, but a loss like this after 29 straight, recalibrate, little more hunger, little more desire, little more effort in the offseason. Not that they weren't putting that in, but it's just human nature to kind of have it. Now they're going to go into the offseason like, okay, how quickly can we get back out on the field and play again? Because they're not used to not just losing, but in the second half, it started to kind of get ugly. I mean, LSU took a knee there. It was 49-25, and that's just Clemson. It's something they're not used to and not accustomed to dealing with. And I think preseason, I think LSU or I think Clemson will be one. I think Ohio State will be probably two. Alabama's going to be up there. LSU, just because they won it all, probably be in the top five. But I don't see them being a team next year that's going to be a team that finishes in the top 10.
And I actually have the way too early list, which came out. And Herbie, you nailed it with Clemson being number one and then Ohio State number two, Bama number three. They have LSU at four and then Oregon at number five and then Georgia there at six.
How about Ducks and Ohio State early next year in Eugene? A home and home.
I'll take that.
Isn't that a good
one?
That's
awesome.
That's a great one.
That's phenomenal.
Yeah.
And by the way.
And that, doesn't Oregon have North Dakota State as well? Like that, don't they have that on the schedule as well?
Who does?
Oregon has,
I hear you.
Oregon has North Dakota State. I think so.
Wow.
And you're like, whoa, that is bold.
Yeah. By the way, if we didn't have Joe Burrow to discuss this year, Justin Fields would have very much been more talked about because his season was ridiculous and he wasn't healthy.
Yeah.
And he wasn't really even healthy down the stretch, and he's going to come back next year with a year under his belt with the top two coordinator in college football with Ryan Day calling plays. He's going to set the world on fire, regardless of all the losses. And you saw all the people depart for Ohio State. There's a lot of people that stayed like Wade that is going to still make this defense ridiculous and this team ridiculous next year too.
And there's another team that's going to have hunger and anger, in their minds and deservedly so. They feel that they should have been in that championship game. And, you know, I'm talking to Ryan Day and some of those players, it's much like Trevor Lawrence, you know, they're already working out, already like looking forward to spring ball, already looking forward to the start of the season. So, you know, I think those are intangibles that can really carry you into the off season and give you a lot of hunger and desire. And a lot of times that's important because you don't win championships when you show up at camp in August. It's what you do in January up to August that really separates teams. And I think both those teams are going to enter the offseason with a big chip on their shoulder.
I got one more for you too. I think Georgia's going to be really good next year.
Yeah.
I think Georgia.
I love that quarterback.
Story. Well, Pollock wouldn't stop talking about this, Herbie, for the last
First of all, Kevin, can you give me credit that I talked about Jamie Newman during the season?
Yeah.
During this last football season?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Anybody that listens to the podcast knows you've talked about it, but you wouldn't stop talking about it for a week.
Well, I tell you what, dude, you're talking about a Georgia offense that did not stretch the field horizontally or vertically the last several years.
Who besides Pickens will help them with that? And who's the OC? Is it still James Coley?
It's Coley. It's Coley that's calling the string. I think he's the OC right now, and I think he's the guy that obviously. I don't know that they're not going to still bring in somebody else. I think that changes might obviously continue to be made, but I'm talking about from a standpoint, if you're going to be a gun offense, Kirk, and you got a quarterback that's stationary and you got a guy that a running back going one way and now a quarterback that can really run going the other direction.
Sure.
Now you stretch the field horizontally and now when you have a quarterback that can throw the ball down the field deep,
well, the safeties can't cover everything.
Oh right? My God!
They got to respect the quarterback threat. You got to get an extra guy down,
and now you leave
Pickens one on one downfield. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So that's and by the way, every single person except J.R. Reed back on defense to a defense that was the number one scoring defense in the country last year that only brings in more. You know, talented guys and guys that studied for a year and got better. I think the defense will be the best in the country. And then you talk about an offense that is going to be fun to watch with
they'll be the bullseye. They'll be the SEC team that everybody will be talking about that they would expect to get to Atlanta, expect to come out of the SEC just on paper. If you look at that team, you're right. They're going to be loaded. And Georgia fans probably have no idea who Jamie Newman is, but they will after they watch him in spring games.
Yep.
By the way, you guys may just stay in Eugene the first 2 weeks of the season. September 5th, Oregon hosting North Dakota State, and then Ohio State the following week. Like,
that's awesome.
What a combo to start the season.
And you're right. Like, who plays North Dakota State?
You know, exactly.
Because if you beat them, it's like, well, yeah, you should beat them, right? And if you lose to them, it's like, what the hell is wrong with you guys? How did you lose to them? That's courage right there. You know,
yes, it is. Especially with Ohio State on the other side the following week coming into town. All right. We touched a little bit on this.
By the way, on Oregon, Joe Moorhead going to Eugene.
Oh,
phenomenal hire for Mario Cristobal. I mean, people can say, yeah, he's at Mississippi State and things didn't work out great. Okay. Go back to the way he called plays with McSorley and Saquon and the receivers that they had. I think that'll be a good fit.
Stud.
I don't know who the quarterback will be. I'm sure that they'll, who knows, transfer portals come and go and who knows who it'll be, but the system that they'll have, and the physicality and the nature, great fit for Mario Cristobal getting Joe Moorhead.
I agree. He was the difference, I think, for James Franklin at Penn State on turning that program around and favoring him and at the base actually celebrating what they had with James Franklin. Cause Franklin, we know, could recruit. I thought Moorhead did a phenomenal job with the talent on the field on the offensive side when he was there with McSorley. I'm with you there. Before we move on, I do want to get your thoughts on Ed Orgeron and you guys touched a little bit on this about what he did the night of. I thought the most controversial thing was him saying he's going to have a ham sandwich afterwards to celebrate because he was in the moment and he had a really good time with it. How do you
roll the ham sandwich, bro? Stop being a hater.
No, I'm not being a hater. I'm saying like he handled it really well when people were trying to test him to see what he was going to do and how he was going to celebrate. And he stayed in his lane. We're talking about a guy just 2 years ago that lost to Troy and it felt like it was the bottom for LSU. And now he's on top. Does this change perception of Ed Orgeron everywhere? Or did a lot of people just take him for granted?
I don't know if anybody took him for granted. I think like everybody in life, he just happens to be on a big stage. You have failure. You know, you go through life and you make mistakes and you either learn from those mistakes or you don't. You know, you can be stubborn and say, I wasn't wrong and I'm going to stay the same and I just need to get better players and have your head in the sand. Or you can do what Ed Orgeron did and kind of look in the mirror and say, you know what? I was a little bullheaded. I was a little immature. I wasn't quite ready. And I'm referring to the Ole Miss job when he got his first head job and he recruited well, but he didn't necessarily coach well. And I think he learned from that. He'd be the first one to tell you that. And I think he also not only surrounded himself with better people, I think he's just matured like anybody else would. He's matured and, you know, he still has that fireball inside him. You know, he's still, you know, he was kind of kidding with us, pregame with Fowler. I did an interview, the day before the game with the two head coaches, and he asked the coaches, is there anything you'd like to ask the other coach? And this is Coach O telling us this story. He's like, man, I almost did this. I almost did this. Just kind of kidding around. He goes, but when you asked, Dabo what he would like, from me, and he said, well, Dabo said to him on air, well, is there any way, you don't mind sitting Joe Burrow for a quarter? And Coach O, this is the day before the game. Coach goes, oh, it took all I had not to say, well, we plan on sitting Joe in the fourth quarter. He goes, but now we start bursting out laughing. He goes, now the old Coach O would have said that. He goes, but the new Coach O, I'm not going to say that. So, you know, so I think it gives you an idea that he's matured. He's grown up, but he's still, don't make no mistake, it's not like he's Tom Landry on the sideline. Like he's still incredibly emotional, knows how to plug in, knows how to relate to the kids, knows how to get them fired up, you know. So he's different, but in the same, in a lot of ways, he's still the same.
If he'd have said that, he'd have been right, by the way. They could have rested Joe in the fourth.
you imagine that, though?
True story, by the way. True story. You know, listen, Coach O, I like what Kirk said because we all have to fail sometimes before we succeed. And I think he tasted failure. But the one thing, if you ever spend time with Coach O, he is so daggum intense and he cares so much. And when you're a kid and you play for somebody like that, that you know cares for you and has your back, you fight for him tooth and nail, man. You fight hard for him. And he has grown up. But the most important thing Coach O has been able to do is get guys like Dave Aranda, get guys like Joe Brady. He's done a phenomenal job spending money on getting assistants around him. And listen, Dabo's done the same thing too. It ain't like Dabo hadn't done that. He spent money on Venables and obviously the OC, you know, Chad Morris initially spent a lot of money on Chad Morris, and then it evolved to Elliott and Scott. Obviously those guys came in and then Scott's now left, but I just think that he's done a great job hiring people, but he always brings the passion and energy, and he is Louisiana, and that's what we talked about all leading up, and he relates to that state. He resonates with those folks, and he does a good job of being him and being intense, and but also I think you can tell from a CEO standpoint and from corporate standpoint, like his answers are more coaching answers now. They're not just fueled with adrenaline and fueled with passion, and he's done a good job. Because listen, you heard him in the post-game Alabama speech with his kids. Like he's going to be Coach O, and he's going to drop plenty of words and inspire his guys, but also knowing when to flip that switch and be corporate. I think that's what he's done a good job of. And listen, he doesn't owe that to anybody, but when you do that, it takes away people's ability to run their mouth about people and to create negativity about you. And I think he's done a good job of that.
And, you know, I think what we talked about earlier, Kevin, he's going to have now a new challenge, because when they went into Tuscaloosa this year, it was very easy to stand up and look at that team and say, eight straight? No, it ends today. And have that team just building every week, building and building and building with confidence and swagger. And he knew that he had a quarterback and a system that could go into Tuscaloosa, stand toe-to-toe in the middle of the ring with Tua, who I know was injured. And with all those receivers, you knew it was going to be potentially a shootout. He knew that he had that team. That's great. And all the way to the end, he had a motivated team with a chip on their shoulder, okay? That chapter's closed. We've been celebrating it all year, and especially the last 3 or 4 days. That's done. Now, he's waking up today, going to the office. Joe Brady's not coming over to the office. Joe Burrow's not coming over to the office. Those other nine guys that are leaving early, they're not coming in there to work out, right? So they're going to go to winter conditioning with a bunch of new players and a bunch of guys that were kind of on the back burner. Not to say that they can't still be competitive, but college football is about pushing buttons and motivating 18, 19, 20, 21-year-old kids. And you just climb that mountain. So the new challenge is, can he find ways to continue to get his football team not just ready schematically, but ready for every team is going to want to beat LSU? That's what makes Nick Saban and Dabo Sweeney so special. They handle that. and they show up every week, every year. And now LSU is being thrown into that pool, and Coach O is, and it's very, very interesting to watch him in 2020 and beyond, how he handles that, and can he get his team up to face that kind of challenge?
It's a great question. They've got big questions, especially, of course, a quarterback and the offensive coordinator moving on, and how do they handle success? And now that the bar is raised, and you guys mentioned it, 9 wins isn't going to be enough at LSU after what they went through this season and how they did it. On the other side with Clemson, you know, it's how you handle success. Now it's how you handle defeat for the first time for Trevor Lawrence. And you know, Trevor Lawrence, remember against Alabama a year ago, we were all, our jaws dropped because we were like, you're not supposed to play like this as a true freshman. And it felt like Monday night, he looked like a true freshman. And how would you explain what we saw from Trevor Lawrence? Because listen, we're not expecting the young man to be perfect. He's 20. He went 25
Apparently
no
you are.
Before
Apparently
the loss.
You are.
No,
you just
no.
Hated on the
but
dude,
one
man.
Of the things, one of the things that we saw was a ton of overthrows, which felt like he was trying to compete against Joe Burrow instead of
13,
taking
wasn't
the
it?
Natural check down,
yeah,
right? Yeah, it was 13.
Yep.
And instead of going for, hey, maybe I'm going to get a little single or a double here, it felt like every single play he wanted to say, oh, Joe can do this, I can do that. What was your takeaway from what you saw from Trevor and trying to press a little too much?
My take was that when a quarterback plays, when Trevor Lawrence plays the way he did in last year's national championship, we're all going to marvel at the job that he did as a true freshman. And the reality is, that Justin Ross did a really good job of making plays. Justin Ross did a really good job of getting separation, making plays after the catch. And yet we always want to go back to the quarterback. And this is true for any, you know, when we talk about the Packers, we marvel about Aaron Rodgers, or the Saints is Drew Brees. But as a quarterback, you're going to get way too much credit when things go well. And everyone's going to point the finger at you when things don't go well. And most guys get that, right? But if you really study the film and watch Trevor Lawrence, yeah, I think he started to get uncomfortable. I think he started to press a bit. I think he started to try to make some plays. But I think there were two things that I saw happening. Number one, I thought that Dave Aranda had a nice plan, that even though he wasn't getting necessarily to Trevor, Trevor was moving his feet. He was constantly aware, especially to his blind side, that that Kalavon Chaisson was getting there. He was winning against Jackson Carmen, and he was touching his shoulder, or he was flashing around him. And on that blind side, I think after two quarters and three quarters of that, I think between the score and feeling that pressure, and then the reality is, honestly, Justin Ross, T. Higgins, they were not winning. The receivers from Clemson in the Ohio State game and the LSU game against teams that finally are willing to press them and play man, you're not going to see that in the ACC other than maybe Florida State. Now they had to face two teams that were willing to say, hey, we got equal or better talent than you. We're going to come right up, these big, long receivers, we're going to pop them right in the chest and try to disrupt the timing. And to the credit of Ohio State, that if it weren't for Trevor running, they would have lost that game. And to the credit of LSU, they won on the outside. They yep. shut down the Clemson receivers. And I think Clemson misses a Hunter Renfrow and Artavius yep. Scott, like a guy that kind of receiver that can attack and work on that slot against the nickel. And they didn't have that much. I mean, I love Amari Rogers, but I think
he's
you know,
not back
still coming
yet.
On. No, he's not back healthy.
No.
It looks a little heavier. I think he'll get a lot leaner. He'll take that brace off. He'll be the guy that you need there in the middle next year. But man, all you have is these big, long receivers. It's either a vertical pass downfield or nothing, you know, and against good corners, David, they kind of shut that down. And I think it's easy to say what was wrong with Trevor. To me, it was what was wrong with the receivers not getting separation.
Yeah, we talked a lot leading up to the game, and I thought one of the things that Clemson's really missing is just the over-the-middle attack, the ability to attack the middle. They don't have anybody that can attack the middle of the field. And you could tell it was a big deal. And I wondered how they would, you know, how did they do it in the Ohio State game? They did it with Etienne. They did a good job. McQueen, by the way, makes a play on a screen pass that he, outside all the way on the sidelines that probably goes for a touchdown if he doesn't get there. But the speed of LSU, you could tell, by the way, Stingley took away half the field. I mean, my God, like that.
Yep. Oh,
true freshman number 24.
They didn't even try. They basically were like,
no.
Oh. Okay, that side's done over there. Let's keep going to one over here on the other side.
Anywhere else we can go? Let's find somewhere else. And I thought, you know, honestly, watching tape, Kirk, I thought 88, I thought Galloway, you know, he didn't play a ton this year, obviously, for Clemson, but they needed that tight end, H-back too, that could attack the middle. And they did it first drive. And it was a huge gain. How long did he got like 40 yards on that first.
Big play,
50 yards on that first catch, but I agree they didn't have an answer over the middle of the field. And Trevor's got insane arm strength, and the dude can throw it anywhere, and you've seen his ability. You know, next year, I think the next progression for him too is more touch, you know, more touch over the middle of the field, more layering the football. And, you know, I think they'll give him more routes. Kirk, everything they run in that offense is high degree difficulty of throwing.
Yeah.
I mean, there's not a lot of gimmies, and they're throwing
18 to 20 yard outs on like 3rd and 8, 3rd and 9, and I think that's tough. I do think this. Go ahead, David, finish up because I want to add one last thing.
I was just gonna say Joe Burrow is throwing a million slants and a million easy right. throws that are bunnies mm-hmm. that should be caught and that move the sticks and you get another crack to go downfield. I think they could do a little better job of more RPO games and more easy plays, more easy completions, more pop passes when you do have a guy like Etienne that can run the football, and Trevor Lawrence's ability to run the football. Now you can really kill the middle of the field, and then I take my shots deep on the outside of the field.
And they lose T. Higgins, who's coming out early. Yep. Ross is back. They have those two young freshmen, that are really talented. You know, 10 and 2 that have, but it's similar build though. Both of those guys are kind of long. Galloway will have, you know, a year to get ready in the offseason. We saw, you know, glimpses of what he could do, in that game. And then Amari Rodgers, I think, will be a big key, in developing, as David talked about, between Galloway and Rodgers. I think those two coming on will be as important as anything, for Trevor Lawrence. You lose, I'm assuming, has Etienne come out?
He hasn't decided yet. That's the big one. That's the crippler.
Is it fair to say, when's the deadline for that? I mean, is it next couple days?
Yeah.
Okay. So
yeah,
my assumption is he's gone. And if he is, you know, the way they recruit, they're always going to have players. Lynn J. Dixon is a very talented player. He's just not an ETN. I mean, ETN is the key to their whole offense. You know, whether he's catching the ball to the backfield, running the football, yards after contact, guy can do so much. So, if he decides to come out, that's not like, oh, no problem, just bring in the next one. That's a bit of a setback there at that spot.
Yeah, well, the way the Clemson's restacking, reloading, we know they'll be back. And so
plus Tiger they lose four senior offensive linemen. Offensive linemen. The left tackle, Jackson Carman.
And if you follow recruiting, their defensive line class they just brought in, is going to be stupid. So,
Dabo knows. Yeah, they targeted
man.
They made
next
sure
year,
to target
by the time that rolls around to the playoffs, because they've already had, you know, a good solid 13, 14 bye weeks, and they're going to be, you know, scrimmage. They had a couple scrimmages, and they'll be ready to rock and roll and ready to reload.
And really, if you look at their defense, you know, every one of those I think Xavier Thomas is going to be better next year. I thought he got heavy. I think he'll drop some weight, try to get twitchier. David, you can relate to one point in your career, you were lighter than you thought. You know, maybe tell us about how you went from being light, making a lot of plays, reason you wanted to get bigger, then you went back down to being lighter. I think he's going through that a little bit himself. I think he wants to get down in weight to be a little bit more explosive off the edge. They have Rudolph back. They have Foster back. Tyler Davis, the freshman. Jordan Williams, 59. So all those guys return along with, as you just said, that new wave of players coming in. They lose Chad Smith. They lose Isaiah Simmons, Kayvon Wallace, Tanner Muse. But everybody else is back. I'm guessing, is A.J. Terrell, has he announced anything, what he's doing?
He hasn't announced. I don't think he's announced.
Neither has Simmons, by the way.
And Simmons hasn't either? Okay. Maybe they're all going to do it together.
Like they did a couple years ago.
Yeah. Yeah, they probably
They all
will.
Stayed and came back and then spanked Bama.
Yeah.
I mean, they all have till the 20th to decide, so they got 4 days in between. And you mentioned the schedule for them, of course, the ACC, but they circle November 7th. You guys may be making a trip, you know, to Notre Dame, because Clemson taking on Notre Dame, that would be a fantastic matchup. We'll see how that plays out November 7th.
And then the year after that, by the way, the year after that, Clemson starts really out of conference scheduling is going to be awesome for them. I mean, they're going to start amping it up big time. And we've seen them in the past take on Auburn, and we've seen them take on A&M, and they got Georgia in the future. They're doing their best to amp up their schedule as well.
I'm looking at that 2021. They've got South Carolina State, Wyoming, and UConn. So we'll see if they can add some more later on. All right, before we go, this has been great. You guys breaking down the game. Appreciate that. I just one thing I want to bring up here, because he hasn't said anything to you or me, Herbie, but somebody I know was eating at a fast food restaurant recently.
No
down
way.
In, South.
No
and,
way. That's
there's
impossible.
A picture of a guy dressed up in an apron, and you see his legs, and he's holding tacos or a burrito. David Pollock, do you want to share anything with us here?
See, you thought it was fast food. It's not fast food. Thank you.
Is it casual dining?
I appreciate it. Yeah, it's bar burritos, by the way. It's actually good, healthy. They have tofu. They have actually really, really, really good stuff. So you tried to pull something and try to pull something out of the hat, but you were misinformed. You should have looked up your details, Kevin.
So you're going to get
a host.
You're
going to look up their details, brother.
You're going to avoid the real conversation. Please, if anybody's listening, just Google David Pollock and bar burritos.
You can look on my Twitter. I just posted something on there.
Dude, what was the last time you ate? What was the last time you ate fast food?
Exactly.
Fast food? I don't know the last time.
Yeah. Like 04?
Now, Chick-fil-A constitutes fast food, and I'll eat some of their grilled nuggets occasionally, but
yeah,
it's been a while. It's been a minute.
Yeah.
Like 05? What year?
No. I've had before that. Now, that's been that long for sweets beside the...
When was the last time you had a ice cream cone?
I don't know. I couldn't tell you. It's been at least 10, 15 years. I
mean, are you a fan of ice cream or no? Did you used to be in your prior... Previous...
Well, I mean, if you look at my pictures, you can tell I used to be a fan of ice cream and a lot of things, but.
No, what was your favorite sweet? You know, like Des loves, donuts and cupcakes. You know, what's your favorite sweet?
Mama used to make that lemon pie that was off the chains.
Okay.
It was really good. We used to do some good pies back in the day. Mama used to cook. My mom cooked, we had a family of four, and she cooked like it was a family of 18. So
you
never
had to make up
Yeah, I had to cover the rest of the people that weren't there. Kelly Pollock could throw down.
Oh, that's funny.
Moderation wasn't our key.
Go to David Pollock's Twitter account and check out the picture.
Barbaritos, baby.
Let me tell you, I was stunned that you even walked into a fast food place or a casual dining place that serves burritos. I was stunned.
You can even eat there, by the way, Mr. I don't eat a lot of things. You could eat there.
I eat chicken. Come on. What are you talking about? I don't eat pork and red meat.
We got tofu there,
I eat
too.
Chicken.
You eat horse, too, apparently, because we found that
no,
out the
I don't.
Other day.
No,
unbelievable.
No, I don't. Jesse Palmer's the only person. Herbie, have you ever eaten horse? Because Jesse Palmer told us he ate horse. And that turned into a completely different conversation while we're on
me?
The air.
No.
Yes, he's eating a horse.
Yeah.
I didn't know that
like
legal.
On purpose?
I didn't know you could do that. Yes.
On purpose.
Yeah. On purpose. Yeah. He said it was more gamey than usual, which you're like,
gosh.
Yeah.
Never.
Yeah.
Never heard of it either.
No, I've never even heard of anybody. What country was he in?
That's a great question.
Definitely not here. one final thing.
Never, I didn't even know, like you said, that was an option. That's crazy.
Neither did we. I don't even know how we got into that conversation, but Jesse gave us that information and we were like, what the heck? What do we do with this? Before we let you go, your boy, by the way, on Twitter had so much fun in that water today that you posted. You're taking the puppy out.
Yeah.
He seems so happy.
Oh, man. That's my thing in the off season. I try to do it in season too, but it's like a 5 mile walk through the woods. Here in Nashville, there's this area that's just beautiful. You would think you're, I don't know, somewhere out in, out west, like in Colorado, and it's about 4.5 to 5 miles. And every day I wake up, they look at me like, are we going? Are we going? Are we going? Are we going? Is today the day? Is today the day? I mean, every day. And I try to do it in the off season 5 days out of the week. And yeah, they're golden retrievers. They just love, all they hope for is a couple squirrels, maybe a few chipmunks. And, and then they dive in the stream, post walk, and they're just, and then they sleep the rest of the day like stuffed animals. Yeah. They're my boys. Yeah. I love them.
They're living the life, let me tell you. He looks so happy. The video is so good on Twitter. He's so happy in the water while drinking the water.
Right?
And stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. That's my off-season.
Fellas, Hey, it's the greatest off season. Enjoy the vacation time with the family. It's been great doing this podcast with you guys. Looking forward to getting back together down the road.
It'll be here before we know it. We'll hop together for spring ball, maybe, right?
Oh, that would be great if we could. Well, right. We'll wake up Pollock from his slumber because I know he hibernates.
And so we decided Clemson and Ohio State and Georgia and Oregon are probably going to be the teams at least early. I think Florida could be sneaking around too. We might go back to having a great Florida Georgia game. This one wasn't bad this year, but
poor Alabama. Alabama's not even getting mentioned. Look at them. I mean, geez, poor Alabama.
Well, they're going to be up there. They're going to be up there. I would say. Wouldn't you say they're the team to beat in the SEC West as we sit here right now?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, I would too.
Is it fair to say, by the way, and I took some heat for this too, by the way, for this comment I made, but is it fair to say that a healthy Tua was the best chance to beat Clemson? I mean, LSU, excuse me.
A healthy Tua
and Alabama was the best chance to beat LSU.
They came close.
This season.
They came close. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't have mind seeing Ohio State secondary.
Ohio State would have been fun too.
I wouldn't mind. And Justin Fields against that defense with the weapons he had with JK and those receivers. That would have been a great
matchup. Chase Young bringing the heat against Joe Burrow.
That would have been good.
Physicality in that Fiesta Bowl.
That whole defensive line. I know Chase gets most of credit.
Oh, so good.
That entire defensive line was special.
Yeah. And, other teams in that top 10 that when it's never, too early to look, Oklahoma, they're going to see their quarterback situation with Spencer Rattler and Penn State.
It doesn't matter who's a quarterback. It doesn't matter. As long as Lincoln's there, we're good.
They'll score 45. It doesn't matter.
No, they will. They will. Fellas, it's been fun and I'm sure we'll talk down the road. Appreciate
your
time.
Yep.
All right, guys.
And that'll do it. It's been a fantastic year. My first time doing a podcast, so I want to thank everybody for their patience. We've had, I think, 18 weeks of coverage of talking college football. My favorite thing, and Pollock and Herbie, they've been fantastic, and as well as our guests through Ivan Maisel and Heather Dinich in the middle of the season. Taylor Schwenk has done a fantastic job as our producer. He came in about a month into the season, and we didn't miss a beat. And I know that is not easy to do. So big thanks to Taylor and what he's done for the majority of the season to make sure this podcast comes to you three times a week. I want to thank our sponsor here for today's podcast. That is Allstate. We'll be back next week with Executive Director of the Reese's Senior Bowl, Jim Nagy, with a little draft talk of our own. Until then, enjoy the rest of the week.